Hey everyone, welcome to Seeking What They Sought. My name is Jesse Churchill, and this is a podcast where four of us friends talk about Adventism, namely our experiences with it, our perspectives on it. And instead of trying to do what the Adventist founders and leaders back in the 1800s did, we still want to carry on their attitude, their heart, and their desire for Adventism moving forward. And so we want to always be having conversations surrounding, well, what is Adventism today? What ought it be? Where has it gone wrong? And what are some of the things that we can do to be part of moving it forward? So that's why we have this podcast. And so right now, this is the beginning of season three. Now, seasons one and two were both seasons that we're proud of, but we didn't honestly put a lot of effort into them. I mean, honestly, we didn't record consistently. We didn't have a schedule. We didn't have a lot of guests on. And that was just because we were kind of just having conversations when we wanted to. But for this season, we decided to be intentional. So we have a schedule now. It's going to be every 2 weeks we're going to release an episode. And so you can look forward to those on a consistent basis. We're going to be going through kind of the end of the summer with this season. This is the year 2021, in case you're listening to this in the future. But we are really excited about this season, and I hope that you enjoy this first episode. It's on the topic of being unequally yoked and our conversations surrounding that. So we'll get into this first episode, and we'll catch you back on the other side.
And now a word from our sponsors for this episode. Has the pandemic of COVID-19 affected your social life, maybe your love life? Do you miss those times in line meeting a new friend at the church potluck? Well, the Love Potluck has got you covered. The Love Potluck is a speed dating platform for Adventist singles. The people of the Love Potluck are passionate about creating a space for singles to make connections, especially during these distant times. So no matter where you are in the world, sign up for the Love Potluck today to have an opportunity to build a meaningful relationship with another person. You can find their website in the show notes of this episode. We want to thank the Love Potluck for sponsoring this episode of Seeking What They Sought. With that said, let's dive right back into the episode.
There was a video from a organization called GYC. If many of you may know what that is, but it's Generation Youth for Christ. It's a organization that is a little bit notorious for being a little on the conservative side. Not a little, tends to be quite a lot on the conservative side. And there was this crazy sermon that we saw by what was his name? Randy Skeet.
Yeah, Randy Skeet.
Yeah,
the legend himself.
Randy Skeet. And this was preached at a GYC conference a few years back. And at the end of his sermon, he does a altar call. And, you know, most altar calls are built around, giving your life to Jesus, doing something that that is surrendering in its overall function. You know, that's what it's built around. And so I mean I've done a few altar calls, gone up for a few altar calls, and it is more like, you know, give your life to Jesus again, or recommit your life to Jesus, or give something, you know, to Jesus. And he was doing that. He was talking about giving something to Jesus. And you get to the altar call, and he makes the call for anyone who is dating someone who is not Adventist. You know, maybe you need to break up with your girlfriend or boyfriend who's not Adventist, and you know you shouldn't be dating them. And that's pretty much most of the altar call is him making that specific call to a bunch of youth. And it begs a pretty interesting question. You know, if you're Adventist, mm-hmm. why were you dating someone who's not Adventist in the first? No, if it begs a very interesting question. Is that even a valid point of view, to be honest? Like, I mean, did you ever hear that growing up? It's the, mm-hmm. it tends to be built around the do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. Mm-hmm. That it's a verse, 2 Corinthians 6,
chapter 6, verse 14. Mm-hmm. Do not be equally unequally unyoked.
Words are hard.
Do not be unequally yoked
with non-believers. Eric and I will turn that into a video a year from now.
Oh gosh, yeah, that's happened before, based off of my verbal stumbles. Yeah, so I mean, that's something that I definitely heard. I don't know if it was ever pushed on me. I can't really think of that. I don't recall any moments, but it's definitely something I definitely heard. Have you guys heard that growing up? Or
yeah.
Now the question then becomes: did you hold to that? And I think we know the answer for Sean, because you only dated your current wife, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
I like how you had specify current.
We were all pretty worried about you. That's why I wanted to ask. We were pretty worried that you weren't going to find anybody. Really? I mean, like, Anthony, am I right on that?
Sean, I always had hope for you. I always
Anthony,
had hope for you.
You're the level of is always the cruelest. Somehow Jesse is kinder with his harsh words.
No, but Sean,
I'm just honest.
Sean, you know I was there. I was there through the dark days. You know, we were both single and we were both weirdos in the back of Spanish class.
Playing RuneScape in the basement.
Exactly. So, you know, I have no room to talk.
Well, jokes aside, Sean, you only dated a girl that was Adventist. Anthony, have you dated outside of the true faith, the one true faith?
I have dated outside of the one true faith. Yes.
So when you say it like that, it just sounds so cultish.
It does. It sounds scary.
Absolutely. I don't think I have. Now that I'm thinking about it, no, I haven't. But it does beg a pretty interesting question. I don't know if I ever really considered dating outside of Adventism, primarily because I went to Adventist school growing up. I went to Adventist church growing up. I went to Adventist college. So, like, there wasn't necessarily – I wasn't, like, just overwhelmed with a bunch of people who weren't Adventist around me. In your perspective – a call like that, an altar call like that. What are your thoughts on that? It's a very specific,
specific altar call.
Yeah.
And potentially very, it depends on how you think about it. It's either really harmful potentially, or it's exactly what needs to be said. I maybe there's some gray area in that, but I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yes. Sean, you have things to say?
Well, you know, what's hard about it is, it's not even just the content. It's any altar call that's very specific. Like you could tackle that as its own topic. Cause like you said, Jesse, it could be really needed for someone and then be really hurtful or harmful for someone else based on where they're at in life and where their relationship's at. You know, it could potentially be damaging. So it's hard to pin it down, right? There could be someone that was in an unhealthy relationship, and part of that happened to be with a differing level of beliefs. Because we know, you know, just objectively, when two people have differing views that are on a core topic like religion, it can make things difficult in a relationship. So, yeah, it could be needed for some people. But anyways, we can leave that to when we actually want to get into our perspectives on how we feel about that concept as a whole. But,
well, that's I'm glad you specified specifically it's unhealthy around the area of beliefs, because I think that some people might just make you're dating someone who's not Adventist and that automatically means it's unhealthy, which is at least worthy of discussion.
Or the reverse, like, oh, I'm dating someone Adventist, so this is going to be good. This is what God wants.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 Anthony, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I feel like... I feel like it could be, I kind of agree with you guys. Like, I think it could be either. Like, there's, I don't know Randy Skeet personally, so I, you know, I don't know his heart behind that, obviously. But he tends to be notoriously legalistic when it comes to things like this. I believe he's the same evangelist who said, if you use an iPhone Bible for your like the Bible app instead of a physical Bible, God could murder you. Like God could smite you down and kill you.
Yeah, he's is that weird intersection between your own personal opinion and calling God down upon
people. Not even just disappointed, yeah, or it's not the best. It's you're going to die.
You're gonna die.
What? I don't know if that's the specific quote, but at least the sentiment was there.
Yeah, for sure. So he has a history, I think, of saying some questionable things. I think this one, yeah, it touches on a topic that I think, like, maybe I agree in theory with the idea, like what you said, Jesse, like maybe that's what someone needs to hear. Like, they're in a relationship, there's not a matching of core values, and therefore they know it needs to end, but they've been putting it off. And then maybe he's that voice to say, hey, like, you already know it needs to end. So here's that moment. And so it could be really life-giving, but I think, knowing Randy Skeet's history and like his tone, I think, of preaching things, I find that kind of questionable, because, like, yeah, I think it's really nuanced.
So here's my question for both of you is, I'm generally more in an Adventist bubble than you guys have been in some ways. Would you say that this is, when I was researching on this topic, I noticed when I typed in unequally yoked, the mm-hmm. vast majority of articles that came up were Adventist based.
Really?
Interesting. Yeah. Not even typing. Well, I didn't even type SDA on some. Now, some of them I did.
I think there's a lot to that, though. I mean, first of all, if you think about dating interdenominationally, in between, like, let's say Lutheran and Presbyterian.
Right.
I mean, the amount of divergent beliefs between those two are at least that would create lifestyle differences. Mm-hmm. I mean, there might be specific theological things, but, you know, it's like the amount of divergent beliefs that would create different lifestyle practices are not very, there's not really that many, between a lot of denominations. Whereas Adventism, we specifically have Sabbath, you know, state of the dead. And what I mean by Sabbath, it's not even so much believing the Sabbath. It's you go to church on a completely different day. So it's right. not like, I guess I can compromise on this specific theological thing. Or maybe I don't even really care about that specific theological thing. I'm going Baptist now, you know? Whereas Adventism is like, you have to worship on a different day. And along with that is the belief that everyone who worships on Sunday
right.
in conservative circles are the devil incarnate, in essence. I'm massively oversimplifying. But so I think there's a lot of reasons for that, Sean. I'm not surprised, is because our culture and lifestyle becomes so different that, you know, maybe other denominations, they're not experiencing the same sort of like unequally yoked idea.
I definitely think it's a discussion happening historically more in the Adventist church than other Christian denominations. That's for sure.
Says all three of us who have been Adventist our entire lives. Yeah, no, it's definitely in our church more than any other church we have never right, been in ever. Right.
Exactly. So true. And that's fair to a point. But as I said before, as well as when I was looking it up, it just happened to be. And again, that's anecdotal. It's not exclusively Adventist. Obviously,
Google is the Bible. Google is the Bible.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Google Scholar. There's usually when I was looking up things about, you know, unequally yoked, usually it was a discussion on a believer, a Christian versus a non-believer, which is not necessarily what we're talking about here. It is the first conversation. And in fact, we're talking about experiences of, our experiences growing up. And I would say this, the biggest problem was, have a relationship with someone that is not a Christian. That was the mm-hmm. biggest sin in our books, right? The way we view it.
Yeah.
And then the secondary was, you should also, you know, date, be interested Adventist. In marrying someone that's Adventist, but it wasn't maybe the same level as someone that was mm-hmm. atheist or agnostic or another religion. So it was still something I heard growing up, but it wasn't the same level. And so, but it was still something that was discussed in our church. And so I guess the question is, where did that even come from? Why did that culture get set up in our church versus other denominations? Why is that something that's perhaps, right? We've talked about our experiences, but I'm maybe jumping out and saying maybe it's been discussed more in our church than other denominations, at least when it comes to relationships in the Christian bubble, right? So why is that? Why is that more emphasized?
I think, I kind of answered it earlier unintentionally, but But yeah, I think it's because our culture and the divergent beliefs tend to be more on the what you might call important. The implications of many of our beliefs lead to many other conclusions. You know, so for instance, if you believe the seventh day is the Sabbath, and then so seventh day is the Sabbath, and you take the verse in Revelation that the remnant church is those who keep the commandments of God. Yeah. Well, then, bam, we're the remnant church, yeah. And I don't know if we've talked about why. I think all of us kind of agree that that's not necessarily the best interpretation of that verse, but still, I mean, that's what I mean is the implications of many of our beliefs lead to things that are different. So therefore, the chance of there being some sort of conflict related to those beliefs is much higher than between, like I said, a Baptist and a Lutheran. Obviously, there's going to be differences there, but it's more in like how you practice church on Sunday morning to some degree than it is in the theological beliefs and implications of said things.
Mm-hmm. I think it definitely depends on your view of Adventism and what you identify as the core beliefs of Adventism. Because that differs depending on where you lay on the spectrum of Adventism, what you emphasize is important. So like you mentioned, Jesse, if you do believe in the concept of remnant and keeping the commandments as an identifier of the last day church, that would make it significant. If you truly believe that, that would create a serious conflict in a relationship with someone that is part of an old timey word be the apostate, right? Ooh,
the apostate.
So that would make it a conflict if that's what you believe. And that must be why it gets.
When you were saying it earlier, I was just laughing in my head because I'm like, it says, "Don't be unequally yoked with unbelievers," you know. And I definitely get, and we have to talk about some of the reasons behind it, but I get the reasons behind that. But then it's funny because it's like, don't be unequally yoked with unbelievers, and it's like saying that to another Christian is just that's quite the statement to make. It's sure. You know, I can't be unequally yoked. It's like, but I believe in Jesus.
But I believe in Jesus too.
Jesus died for me, and that Jesus is going to come back someday. It's like, you unbeliever. But that's the thing you just said is that that's one of the things that Adventism has held dear for a long time is that in essence. Because other churches worship on a different day, therefore don't keep the commandments of God, therefore aren't faithful to God, therefore don't love him, then other churches can become apostate. Like all the other ones, in essence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so then it does make it, weirdly enough, a lot easier to say, don't be unequally yoked with literally unbelievers, because we get to put all the other Christians in that box.
Subtly,
I don't know.
Yeah, the bigger question, which we're not going to necessarily get too much into today because it's not our focus, is are there beliefs in Adventism that clearly define us exclusively that matter, that really truly matter, that really change the way I look at the Bible, and also when you talk about end time events, what distinguishes me as a follower of Christ and as a believer versus... you know, those other things. And so that
you're
would
right
be,
about that question.
If
you're right about that question, but it like those things are just present in Adventism. So they're going to have a bearing on unless you just totally, you know, ditch a lot of the.
Well, there's a section of Adventism that would say, oh, we like the idea of really taking serious the Bible and the seventh day Sabbath and just a lot of the concepts of health and rest that we get, but maybe reject the idea of some of the ideas of remnant or last day church and mark of the beast and those concepts as, oh, we are the last day church and look at that message in that circle. I think, and I'm not saying which side I agree with, I'm saying just objectively, if you're to that camp, I think it matters less to you. If you're in a relationship with another Christian, I think it matters more when we ask that bigger question of, does it matter to be Adventist? Does it really change the way I view God, the way I view the commandments, the way I view some of these key topics.
Thanks for bringing up that existential question. Let's avoid it completely. Anthony, what do you think about the previous thing?
That was fantastic.
For the sake of time.
I know. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I think to go back to the question of like, why is it that maybe this conversation is more prominent within our denominational space than others? I mean, we can just look historically, right? Like Adventism is sort of its own like castle in a sense, you know, like when you look at how our origins and 1844 and Miller and like how we were birthed and then sort of the whole like, sort of what you had mentioned, Jesse, just sort of like the traditional Adventist identity of calling other Christians out of an incorrect belief into the truth.
Literally out of Babylon.
Yeah.
Out of Babylon. Yeah.
Into like what they perceived as like truth that was missing and that had been forgotten. Right. And so like what you said, how like different Adventist beliefs sort of necessitate us to create this whole bulwark, like this whole castle. And I think that's probably a lot of the reason why, because over time we've become like kind of exclusionary and insular and like insider focused because of that, because of like sort of the need to create like a whole, you know, system, like a closed system. And so, yeah, when it comes to other believers, it makes sense because it's so different. And another thing I was thinking was the number of, non-Adventist Christian friends that I have that like the way they view their own Christianity and denominational allegiance is so much more like fluid and I think light than like a lot of, at least I myself did growing up and, you know, a lot of Adventists do. Like the number of conversations I've had with people that are like, oh yeah, I grew up Baptist and then I like went to this Church of God, you know, and then I like hanging out with these Pentecostals and like, you know, I met my wife and she was a Pentecostal and she grew up Pentecostal and I was a Baptist, but then we got together, you know, we fell in love and like, you know, we've been married for 45 years sort of thing. So,
and now they're both in sin because they're not in Adventism.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is interesting because I've seen that and there is a lot more denominationally fluid. I'm just coming up with terms now.
Yeah,
denominationally
term.
Fluid people. But yeah, outside of Adventism is its own castle, as you said, that needs to be protected and kept safe. But I think it's interesting because to just deal with the text itself, the unequally yoked with unbelievers, that's an interesting thing to apply to marriage. I mean, it naturally gets there, but that's not what Paul is talking about. Like he's not exclusively talking about marriage there, but that's the thing that we tend to believe that it is speaking about almost exclusively. Yeah, exclusively. Hmm. I mean, the verse itself is, do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers, for what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness? I mean, just say that to your Christian friend, first of all.
Yeah.
And then just say that to someone else. Like, I mean, that's to say that in the context of like a relationship, that's quite the thing to say. And then it goes on, what accord has Christ with Belial? Which is in essence wickedness, or that's the
like evil.
The word that, yeah, that kind of it's related to the word devil. Or what portion does a believer share with an unbeliever? And then getting into verse 16, what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For we are the temple of the living God. And then it goes on to say, as God said, I will make my dwelling among them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Therefore, go out from their midst and be separate from them, referring to unbelievers or people who didn't mm-hmm. believe in God, says the Lord, and touch no unclean thing. Then I will welcome you, and I will be a father to you, and you will be sons and daughters to me, says the Lord Almighty. And the thing is like, I mean, if you're going to take that literally, I mean, first of all, then that means that we have to be completely separate from anyone who does not believe in God.
Essenes.
Yeah, in essence, like, yeah, like the Essenes, the Jewish people who went out into the desert and created their own little societies. And that has, you know, that's what monasticism and those strains of Christianity have in essence done to a large degree. And so it's not that there isn't a place for that. But at the same time, that's quite the statement. If you're just going to take the text, then it's saying, like, in essence, separate yourself from everybody. And become your own little insular community. Mm-hmm. But if that's not really what Paul means, because obviously the Christians were living amongst people, but rather that there's some other level of separation that we have from the ways of the world, in essence. And I don't mean like, oh, we don't smoke, we don't drink, we don't do those, but even like a deeper you know, we don't submit ourselves to the ways of gaining power in the world, because that's not the way of Jesus. Mm-hmm. It's subtle. It's the stuff beneath the surface that isn't obvious, like the typical drug, sex, alcohol, those types of things. Mm-hmm. And so there's a separation in the way that we live because we follow Jesus and because we are a temple of God. And if God dwells in us, then that necessitates a separateness from the world that is different than us. But what's quite interesting about that is you have to be careful about how you apply that, because that can mean friends. That mm-hmm. can mean, you know, even family members. That can mean a lot of people. But yet we don't even take the time to unpack that, let alone unpack why we simply apply that specifically to marriage. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of interesting. I'm not even trying to make a specific claim about what it's saying. I'm just saying, like, it's a lot bigger than...
Sure. Probably the closest that concept gets, even though that Bible verse is never directly quoted there, is the idea of choose good friends, like be in the right circle, you know, and we've all heard that message too, which is, you know, be with good Christian friends. And but
and
it's never
wisdom to that for
sure. I think the concept still applies there, right? And there's wisdom even in the marrying part and the relationship part. So and I think the reason, maybe I'm just saying, I think the main reason that I think Christians have applied that to specifically relationships, marriage, might be because that concept or that problem throughout, especially the Old Testament, was a big issue of intermarrying with other cultures. And that was a big reason, maybe the primary conflict or the primary reason we see God's wrath in the Old Testament, that separation from that exclusive identity with God. So in that way, that's the primary problem. So maybe it's just natural that since that was the biggest problem with God's people, that's the way we apply that teaching.
Well, it's interesting because you mentioned this, the Old Testament exclusivity, the separateness from the world around them. But that's because it was so tied into culture, beliefs in other gods, and the resulting implications for how someone lived their life as a result of those beliefs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, for instance, I mean, if you're someone who believes in the god Baal, or how we would say Baal in our very Americanized version, but Baal, that god, you know, the types of worship that you would have for that god, and then the worldview you gained from that was a completely different way than the way of God. And so it wasn't just like, oh my gosh, we differ on a couple of key, you know, tenets about I do communion every time I go to church versus I don't, you know.
It was like I sacrificed my baby for the spring solstice and you worship Yahweh. it's kind of a big deal.
These don't mix. And then, what you saw with, like, for instance, King Solomon, is you saw the mixing of him with other, women from other places, but he did not stand strong in his beliefs. He appeased their beliefs and then in essence added that to himself. And of course that would have stemmed to then his court, and then beyond that to the people of Israel. And it became this insidious disease within. So there is always the danger of letting in the ways of the world. And again, I don't mean like the obvious things like drinking, smoking, you know, different views on sex before marriage, but rather like the insidious, you know, we worship this God so we can gain power in the world, and we can, you know, do that. We can worship him through the sexual practices we have so we can get rain, you know, and then that warps your view of sex, and then that warps your view of people. And there's so many more things that come from the stuff that's being talked in the Old Testament. So but that principle still applies, but it's so interesting that we would then apply it so narrowly to people who believe in, you know, believe in Jesus, but believe slightly different things.
Sure.
Mm. And so my whole point, and again, I think we could dissect, actually, let me just out my opinion now. I do think it's probably the most wise for an Adventist to marry another Adventist. It's just for various reasons that we can get into as we go on. But it is, I think this verse calls for a lot more introspection about my life and what I'm letting into it, along with like the actual call of God to be part of the world, you know, to pray for the good of my country and my city when I'm in exile, and to seek the good of the nation, as the prophet said, and to, as God said to Abraham, you are blessed to be a blessing to the world. I'm not just supposed to be my little silo castle. I'm supposed to make a difference in the world. So it's the tension of that we ought to be able to be introspective about, the tension between what am I letting in that's damaging and destructive? And at the same time, I'm not called to just, you know, be a silo where I just protect myself.
Yeah.
And so it's a quite powerful verse, but it a lot of that with marriage is so quickly applied without any thought.
The reality is most of our conclusions, if you've listened to us before, is it's more nuanced and requires more discussion. That's
everything's gray.
That is always like, black and white. If you want to save time and not listen to us anymore, it's usually just, hey, we just need to have more discussions, more nuanced, educated, and that speaks to everything in life right now. Politics, like everything, the answer is more discussions that involve nuance. Like that's just the answer for everything, apparently. But Jesse, as you're talking,
not Jesus, Sean.
Oh, man, Bible teacher, that's a mark against me.
It's
going to go on my permanent record.
Can I say one more thing about the verse? Just one more thing.
Yep.
The yoked thing. That is a key thing here, in that yoked is the idea of attaching two animals to each other with the in essence a wooden harness that would help them pull in the same direction. Mm-hmm. And the difference is being unequally yoked, in essence, is if you have a very weak animal on one side, then it's gonna pull funky, you know, like your plow isn't gonna pull straight because it's gonna pull a different direction, so kind of off course. But the difference between being unequally yoked, it's like an ox and an unbeliever. So it's like an ox would be the Christian, and then like it's like I now that I'm saying this, I can't think of an animal that doesn't make unbeliever like
a goat. Hippo.
That just makes
the scapegoat.
Like, yeah. My point is it's like one animal that's meant to do it and one animal that's not doing it, or at least is meant to do something else. And when you attach the two, it just doesn't work very well. Or even better yet, if you think of an one animal being facing one direction, the other facing the other direction, and then you just end up in circles, right? And so the idea is quite interesting, and I think does apply to marriage, because in a marriage you are pulling and you're trying to pull in the same direction, but that's where I think it's. I remember talking to a pastor of mine when I was in high school, and there was a girl that I was dating at the time, and she just wasn't as overtly interested in spiritual things as me. Like, I mean, I was leading worship, I was leading Bible studies, doing all this stuff, and she had gone to church, you know, her whole life, but wasn't doing anything. Like, she wasn't as on fire, I felt. And so I went and talked to him. I was like, I just don't want to be unequally yoked. And he's like, well, here's the thing. Are you headed in the same direction? And you know, maybe she's not as far along as you, but are you headed in the same direction? And I thought that was good wisdom. Mm-hmm. But just to speak to the yoked part of it, is it does create some very meaningful illustrations of how our relationships ought to be, especially our close ones. So there is a reason that it's applied to marriage.
Jesse, that's an interesting concept of are you headed in the same direction? Because if you take this concept of only marrying Adventists, then you're inherently saying that other Christians are not heading in the same direction.
Yeah.
Which is a big can of worms and something to discuss for sure. But again, like we said, that's a separate topic. But that's what where my mind went as you talked about that. So here's what's interesting. If we go back to, you know, yes, this is supposed to be more nuanced. We need to have discussions about what's really important when it comes to relationships, when it comes to moving towards God. What does that look like? The reality is, what has happened in practice? What has actually happened? What happens not just in theory, as we talk about, what has taken place in our church in some ways? So as it does with many Adventist beliefs, it kind of goes back to something that Ellen White said 150 years ago or a while back. Just some interesting quotes, some interesting things to look at here.
Do you know that both Ellen and James White were married to non-Adventists?
I did not know that, actually. I knew James.
You didn't know that?
I knew James was, but I didn't know Ellen was before.
Yeah, they both were. Because, I mean, they weren't always Adventists, so then...
Yeah, gotcha. There it is. There it is.
You're feeling pretty dumb now, aren't you?
Yeah. Nice work.
Did you know that our church founders weren't Adventist? That needs to be a barely.
Been a conspiracy
that's a
theory.
That's a barely that's a barely Adventist article right there.
That's amazing.
Helping them out.
Sorry to completely derail.
No, there's a chapter in one of Ellen White's books, The Adventist Home. There's an old one for your coffee table, The Adventist Home. In chapter 9, she used very strong wording here. The chapter is forbidden marriages. Forbidden. Okay. So the word's forbidden.
That's quite the word. Now, it's forbidden fruit.
Look, I'm not going to go through the entire chapter, but what's interesting is I read through it, and it's been quoted here. I'm on the official Adventist website where Ted Wilson uses quotes from her to talk
good
about it.
Teddy.
And talk about, you know, he was answering the question someone had about, you know, what are, you know, who should we marry? Who shouldn't we marry? People were asking him that question, and he quotes and talks about it. And he specifies, at least Ted Wilson's opinion is, we should only marry within our church. There's a lot of problems that can come up with a mismatched marriage. And he goes into that, and he quotes Ellen White, you know, and this is the quote. And this one actually says it's from Signs of the Times, but I read something that basically lines up with this in Adventist Home. So it's the same quote, basically. It says, men and women professing godliness should tremble at the thought of entering into a marriage covenant with those who do not respect and obey the commandments of God. It was this that opened the floodgates of sin to the antediluvians. Antediluvians are those that live before the flood. Such a connection with the world is a direct departure from God's express requirements. And then she does quote, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. So she quotes that. So what's interesting, though, is, you know, she does what I think as Adventists we hang on to is where she says, you know, we should tremble at the thought of entering into a marriage covenant with those who do not respect and obey the commandments of God. Now, as Adventists, we quote that as, oh, well, there are Christians that don't obey the fourth commandment. So mm-hmm. we can therefore use this quote as a way of saying we should not date and marry other non-Adventists. But what's interesting is the entire chapter, Ellen White never explicitly says you can't date or marry someone that's not Adventist. She never explicitly says that, at least from
it's
what I've read.
Hinted.
Yeah, I think, well, even then, is it a hint? That's what I'm asking. That's what I'm trying to understand. As I read that, I understand what's being said there, and I can see how you can interpret that way as, oh, well, we believe that Christians aren't keeping one of the Ten Commandments, right?
See what you're saying. So you're saying that she's not even hinting at that. Maybe it's she's talking about unbelievers.
Because in general, I think Christians agree that keeping God's commands, following and being obedient to God is a principle we should all seek after. I think most Christians agree with that. I think it's, you know,
you don't
obviously
think she means
when
the Sabbath?
Well, I'm not saying she doesn't. I'm saying it doesn't say that.
That's true.
I'm just reading the words. I'm reading the words, and she doesn't say.
Well, you're
that.
Wrong.
And you could say, oh, well, when you read her other writings, when she talks about keeping the commandments of God, that she does reference that, and that's true. I think she does uphold the idea that the fourth commandment's very important. There's a lot of history with Ellen White on the fourth commandment being very important as a marker of the true followers of Christ.
That's a weighty statement to use as an Adventist, in essence. Like, I mean, it's like, it's one thing for someone who's not Adventist to be like, yeah, those who keep the commandments of God, and it be referencing a lot of vague things. But Adventists tend to use that phrase very specifically.
Sure, sure.
It's true.
Yeah, and it's like, and again, that's a whole nother conversation, because that gets into end time revelation. Those who keep the commandments of God, who have the seal versus the mark. That's a big deal. Is that Revelation 12? Mm-hmm. So again, that's another conversation, but the way we apply that is interesting, right? Because even mm-hmm. then we could again jump to that and say, oh, that's saying we shouldn't date other non-Adventists. But here's where I want to get to it. Even then, what we can go back and forth on that, but you can't say explicitly, is there a church manual, at least that I've seen, there's no church manual instruction on, you can't marry. Like, there's nothing in the fundamental beliefs
thing that says
you can't
do
that.
I think that's because that's where it starts to get real culty.
Yeah, but like, here's the crazy part. You ready?
True. Because it's like Mormonism. Okay. Mormonism. You can't marry someone who's not Mormon.
We came close. You want me to tell you, though? We came really close to it, though. We came really close to it. Now,
really?
Let me tell. Yeah, this is where I wanted to say. I didn't want to tell you guys.
More.
No. This is what got me interested. So this is from Ministry Magazine. And so basically, here's the thing. I didn't know this. And I don't know if you guys have heard this as actual pastors, but here's from Ministry Magazine. It says that the title of the article, I think, is just marrying non-Adventists. The prohibition against an Adventist minister performing the wedding ceremony between an Adventist and a non-Adventist has long been church practice.
Mm.
This tradition has assumed the force of policy, even though it has never been officially voted. So in other words, it's not an officially voted policy in the church manual or from a general or annual council session. It's just been a long-held practice. I don't know if you guys have heard that before. Have you? Have you ever heard that in your church before?
Yeah, sure.
I've heard it from especially older pastors will tend to say that. When was that article written?
1994. So it's an older one. So I don't know if it's been ever. Here's what's interesting. In the article, it goes forward and talks more about this has been a hotly debated item because it the closest it ever got was in this thing called the Minister's Manual. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that. It's not the church manual, but it's the minister's manual, but it's not. It's
we have our own.
Okay.
It's totally different. It tells us about all the secret.
Wonderful.
The secret tunnels underneath the GC and great. The secret great. Symbols that we use to signal each other.
Yeah. And it
triangles.
Says, and the Illuminati. Closest. So I'm literally ignoring you. I'm moving on. It literally says in the article that that in the minister's manual, it did say for a while that ministers should not perform the marriage ceremony of believers with unbelievers. But it doesn't actually say Adventist, not Adventist. It just says believers and unbelievers. And that in practice has been don't marry Adventists to non-Adventists in your church. Don't do an official ceremony. Don't be a part of that.
I should check that out. I haven't seen that in the minister's manual specifically,
and so
I
it's interesting.
Really read through it.
Again, this is from 1994. I don't know because when it talks about revised minister's manual, it's referencing a 1992 manual. So again, this is dated. We would have to look at what's recent. But there were, I guess, multiple annual councils throughout the 90s where people hotly debated like, oh, this needs to be in the church manual so it's authoritative.
Ooh.
So we came kind of close to that, but there was too much debate and people didn't conclude, oh, that's too strong wording to say Adventist, not Adventist, so we're not going to say that. We're going to leave it as is with believer, unbeliever. So we came maybe close to that idea, but then the article talks about why that just isn't practical in many areas. It talks about demographics in certain part of the world where that just can't always be possible, whatever, and other problems with it. So anyways, I wanted to bring that history up because that in practice has been something we've done as a church, which is don't marry. But you wouldn't be fired for
that.
It. You wouldn't be fired for doing that because there's not an official rule or policy in our church for it. So you could marry... you guys could marry or officiate at a ceremony in an Adventist church.
Anthony, you should try that in Michigan and see what happens.
Oh, yeah. Michigan's probably not the best place
to test it there. Test it at La Sierra.
La Sierra is the complete opposite. I would suspect that we could get into some weird potential marriages there and everything would be fine.
Yeah, everything would be okay. Well, that's the thing is like even in our conference, you know, there's certain level like you could marry an Adventist to a non-Adventist or an Adventist to a non-believer, but one of the things that are firing offenses is, you know, marrying an LGBTQ plus couple. And that's still even down there, that's still if it's known by the conference that you have officiated. Even though there are a lot of affirming spaces down there. But so, yeah, it's definitely.
And those who are listening are asking, when are you guys going to talk about that?
Hmm.
And my answer is.
Sean, don't you have a whole lecture series on that? I feel like we're just going to let you.
A whole lecture series.
Let's let Sean handle that.
A lecture series.
By himself.
Yeah, I had a discussion with Jordan Peterson. We did a lecture, 6-hour lecture series. Can you imagine
how boring Sean lecturing for 4 hours must be? Can you imagine his poor children? By the way, I was going to ask you. Sorry, Sean. I went from just like annihilating you verbally to about to ask you a serious question. If a kid in your because you teach middle school, 7th, 8th grade, what if they came up to you and asked you, what do you think about someone who's Adventist marrying someone who's not Adventist? What would you say?
It comes down to me basically agreeing with what you've already said, Jesse. I mean, you already kind of did the punchline 30 minutes ago when we basically said, like, I would recommend it. I would say that it would be wiser. I would give, examples and reasons and just talk about it in a in a way, but also not say like, you're not going to go to hell for for doing this. It's not the action itself, but if your heart is at a place where you don't think it's important with your relationships to be moving towards God, then that's a big issue. That would be the primary thing I'd focus on first. Mm-hmm. And then I would move farther and say, if you're just specifically asking about Adventist, I would turn the question back around on them and say, well, why are you asking me? Why is that something you're curious about? What brought that up for you? And that gives me the heart behind their question. So then that helps me understand how to answer it, because you can ask a question for a million different reasons. And so a lot of times the questioner is not looking for an answer to their specific superficial question. It's the heart behind that they need discussion with.
I think
my non-answer. That's my non-answer.
Here's how I would not answer that question. I kind of feel like it'd be interesting to talk a little bit about why we might think some of the things we do about this. Anthony, I am genuinely curious about what you think. So what I'm going to say first is, I'll just kind of out myself, cause I already said a little bit about what I think, but I don't see a deathly issue with someone marrying someone who's not Adventist, but who is a Christian. And of course that could, you know, that it depends on what you're marrying into. I mean, an Adventist marrying a Catholic, not because of mark of the beast things, but because of the vast difference in belief systems there, it's just going to be a tough go. It's a lot of difference. Whereas like an Adventist with maybe like a non-denominational person who goes to a church that like teaches, hey, like a great practice to have is keeping Sabbath, you know? You know, you're just not going to have as many issues that way. So it really comes down to I think it's pretty situational, about like what's the wise decision. I think it's less wise to marry someone who doesn't, just in general, this isn't even like a believer with an unbeliever. It's just like, if you're marrying someone whose values are vastly different to yours, it's just going to be harder. It doesn't get easier in marriage. I mean, the longer you go in a marriage, the more you find out different things about the other person. But it really comes down to like, I really value this specific thing about how we bring up our kids. And if you have different values on that, it's just going to get worse as you have a child and that child grows. And so it's kind of the same thing. It's like, and I find this to be true in situations that I've seen. Someone who marries someone who doesn't believe, or maybe they grew up believing, but now decides they don't want to go to church anymore. That's a really tough spot to be in as a person. And it's one thing to marry someone and for that person to go through a deconstruction process to the point where they don't believe, but it's a whole nother thing to marry someone knowing that they're not going to ever want to go to church with you, or take the kids or value that. And so then it's all on you. That's your thing. And the values that come with Christianity, they don't hold those. And it's not a good or bad. I'm not trying to make that delineation between the two parties, but rather that you're just not going to have the common ground in some really important places. And so I think that's where it does become a matter of wisdom. I don't think it's a matter of right or wrong or good or bad. I think it's a matter of wisdom. And you can get yourself into situations where you will find more grief in your future than you thought originally. And, you know, in the like, we love each other, you know, we'll work it out. It was, if you want your kid to go to Christian education, they're like, no, I don't want them going anywhere near that. You know, you may find out you really valued them going to Christian education a lot more than you thought. And just things like that. So I think that's where I come down on it. I have done counseling for people who are Adventist and non-Adventist. And I try to make them aware of the differences in belief system. But I think you can work through that. It's not that it's going to be the easiest thing, but I think you can work through that. So that's kind of where I come down on all of it. Sean, I'm curious, you kind of said your opinion. I mean, that's something what would you say to a kid? But I mean, do you have a specific, and then I want to hear what Anthony has to say, because I genuinely just don't know.
The easy thing for me to do is reference studies, because it takes out the And there's not a lot of studies on it. You know, the most that we see a lot is in divorce rates. And there's been some studies on, I don't think it's really, really overwhelming, but it's enough that I see some evidence that when you are of the same faith, and I would have to look at it more specifically. I was just looking at a glance that in general, when you are in the same belief system, the divorce rates are lower. Now there's, what's interesting is there's mixed results on that. There's some that will say that that was a bigger deal 40 or 50 years ago, and that that has actually narrowed in the last 10, 20, 30 years.
That's what I've seen.
When it comes to values, mm-hmm. just kind of becoming more streamlined and not necessarily exclusive in certain Christian cultures versus the world's cult. I use the word the world, but secular culture. So, and Jesse, you even referenced that with, like, if you're living in Old Testament times, the difference between being an Israelite and, you know, a Philistine, pretty big difference. So, anyways, I think I would look at that in some ways and say, just objectively saying, there's enough here to say that this clearly works better when you're of the same belief system. And just saying that objectively and say, if you value it, because you're asking me about Adventist context, well, you're an Adventist, you're asking me about it. If this is something you value, and I'll ask them that question and say, do you value this? Do you value being an Adventist? Do you think it's good? And if the answer is yes, then why wouldn't you want to share that with someone else and be a part of that? Why
because
go to the...
Because you're at a small church where there's no other good-looking Adventist people.
That's right. We get to the practice.
Everyone in the entire church is like, I have a grandson I can hook you up with.
Yeah.
But they're in, like, you know, Florida.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But in all seriousness, like, just because someone's Adventist doesn't mean you should pursue them, like we talked about earlier. It's more than that. So
I disagree. I think that's the only thing that matters in marriage.
I love that's Obstinate and Jesse. Obstinate Jesse is one of my favorite of his forms.
I mean, in some ways there's actual pressure. You know, like when the classic is go to college, like your parents care more about you getting your marriage degree than your marriage certificate over your
even called it a marriage degree.
I know. Your marriage degree.
Marriage degree.
Actually, there was a sermon. Alex Bryan gave this sermon one time, and he showed a graph. And I think he made it all up, and he said as much. So he wasn't hiding the fact that he made it all up. But in essence, it was a graph of your chances of finding a spouse, and then they just massively tank after you leave college.
Yeah.
And I think I don't remember the point of it. I just remember the graph. Like, it was just, this is the harsh reality. You have to find a spouse now.
Yeah.
That wasn't his point, but yeah, no,
but that's kind of a view sometimes too. I mean, that is definitely a view from some, like, this is an important time, you know, when you're around other people that are of
like mind.
Well,
it's definitely true. I mean, I think that for us, so all three of us went to Walla Walla, we all graduated, and the amount of divorces that happened right after Walla Walla amongst people that we knew or acquaintances with was a surprising amount. I mean, like, the amount of people that you're like looking at their Instagram, you're like, wait, there's not a picture of them with the person they married for a long time. And then you ask somebody about it, they're like, oh yeah, they got divorced. You didn't know about that? I'm like, no, they've been married for like a year and a half. And it's just, it's surprising. So, and I say all of that not to make light of failed marriages, but the fact that sometimes the pressure to marry an Adventist translates to marrying young and not marrying and marrying out of, I don't want to call it desperation, but out of a fear of I might never ever find somebody.
Yeah,
and maybe that's not the reason you married them, but that's the reason that you kind of maybe settled for some stuff.
It's like a subliminal thought. Like, it's maybe not something explicit you think about, but maybe it's a natural pressure. It's a cultural pressure just was there. Mm-hmm. Anthony, we're ready to listen to you.
I'm not.
Oh man. Well, yeah, I definitely have lots of thoughts about this. Oh man, but I don't know. I tend to think that there's multiple layers to this whole thing. Like, and it's so hard for me to just talk about the one thing, like, what do I think about being unequally yoked without talking about the other layers of the pie, you know, because there's so many.
Just start somewhere and then we'll eat the pie together.
Okay. Let's all eat the pie together. No. Yeah. I think
it also sounds like, I mean, this just sounds weirdly sexual. I'm just going to be honest. I'm just going to throw that out there. So let's just avoid that.
My head went back to the cult thing, like drink the Kool-Aid, eat the pie together.
Oh, true. Yeah.
That's where my mind went.
Fantastic.
Good. Glad we're on the same page.
It's good to be on the same page, especially with food analogies. I love a good food analogy. So I think, okay. So just bouncing off of what you guys just said, I agree that there is like a cultural pressure to get married, and especially to get married early. Like, I think in general, Adventists, I think this could probably go along the board to Christians in general, but I think Adventists, I think we get married too young. And I think because of that.
Bro, Mary was like 15.
Okay, but that
how old was Joseph?
Yeah, I think like, he was older, but
probably 30.
But still, I'm just saying.
Right, but of course, but I know you're being tongue in cheek because the cultural expectation was so different back then. That was such a different time. When you're back then in that time period, you're considered an adult woman. If you know, like once you have your time of the month, you're considered an adult. You can bear children. You're mm-hmm. good to go. You know. So yeah, in general, I think because I mean the trends are shockingly different. Like millennials in general are getting married closer to 30, but in church we're getting married closer to 18, which is wild. So it's like such a shockingly wide gap. And I think a lot of it has to do with that. Like I think when you get married so young, I think there's a much higher chance for you to be unequally yoked, even with both within Adventism, which brings up another thought of mine, that compatibility, I think, is more comprehensive than only faith. And
no, and I disagree. I remember I think that Adventism is the one true. Defining quality about marriage.
Obstinate Jesse thinks Adventism is the most important part. But real Jesse, I know, agrees with me that
no, he's not even just saying the most important. He's saying the only.
It's the singular.
There's like, no other factor.
Money does not matter. Your values on money matter zero.
You don't even need to speak the same
in
language.
Jesse's world.
You can be Japanese and Hispanic and not be able to communicate.
I mean, you don't even both have to be human under Jesse's rule.
It's true.
But that, this is going down a question. This is brings up the question down. Of can a non-human be Adventist? I mean,
that's our next
that's
episode.
That's a different that's our next episode title.
That's our next episode.
Oh, geez.
Sorry, Anthony.
No, it's good. I think compatibility is so much more comprehensive than faith. And I think when you grow up in our world and faith family, I think, yeah, there is an idea like, oh, yeah, we're both Adventists. Well, we share the same. Mm-hmm. Core values we should, you know, and obviously a lot I think of my perspective is probably because I'm divorced and like that experience I think has shaped my I think I have very different views probably now than I would have like 4 or 5 years ago or even 3 years ago, but but yeah, I think compatibility is so much more comprehensive than only faith. Like I think you can grow up in the same space and still have different values. So I do agree that really it's about core values. Like, do you have the same core values and are you headed in the same direction in the world? And do you think about the world the same? And, you know, like on the important things, like I totally agree that being equally yoked is part of that. But I think there's so many things that I think go into being like equally yoked and compatible. So many other things like personality and family and how you view love and what love is and what love means. And like, yeah, like how you value raising kids and stuff like that. I also feel like, I think dating being unequally yoked and married being unequally yoked are two very different things. Like I would go so far as to say that I almost think you should date outside your faith. Only because dating outside my faith, I found to be an extremely helpful thing for me in my life, and almost like figuring out my core values more. And
that's an interesting thought because
yeah,
it you saying that so I guess let me think about
just this. Process
you saying that not only it throws me off a bit, I think, but it would send some. Specifically like preachers who go to, you know, talk to youth, it would throw them into a, like, they might, you know, completely lose their minds because the idea of saying that you ought to date for experience is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And it does bring in an interesting idea into it of like, I mean, if your value, let's say you do already value, I'd like to marry someone with my core values.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you do have your faith as a core value.
Mm-hmm.
To intentionally date outside of your faith kind of feels like a, I don't know. It feels like you're using somebody. I know that's not your heart. But that's where I'm bringing it up because I'm interested in more in you saying more about that.
And that's the separate another separate conversation is what's the purpose of dating? And how as Christians, as Jesus followers, do we answer that? And is that different than what the world perceives as what the purpose of dating is?
Yeah.
I think it is, but I don't think it's what Christianity, I don't think it's as extreme as Christianity has made it. But I think there should be a difference in
telling. Well, yeah, because I think exactly, Sean, like, I think it all comes down to like what you view the purpose of dating to be. And I think so often, I think part of this like Christian dating culture is that like, I have to date to find a spouse, even when I'm 17, like I have to date to find a spouse. That's the goal of dating.
That's true. When I was dating and I was 16, I was like, I'm dating for marriage.
Yeah, same. Mm-hmm. Like I told that to girls when I was like 16 and I was like, looking back, I'm like, bruh, like you weren't even close to being ready to be thinking about that. Like,
I mean, I was like, I want to save like my first kiss for the girl I'm going to marry. And mm-hmm. So that's what I said to my first girlfriend. And it lasted two months, I think.
2 minutes.
So weak. Same. 100%.
I have no backbone.
No, yeah, but I think so. Well, the funny thing is,
I mean, that's a lot of weight. That's a lot of weight as a 16, 17 year old to be putting on a relationship. Yeah, that's a lot.
It's so much weight. Like, I literally remember telling the girl I dated when I was like 17, 18. You guys know who she is because you were there. I remember telling her one day we were going for a walk and I just had like such a somber, serious conversation with her where I was literally like, I just want to let you know, like, I'm only dating you because I could see myself marrying you. And she was like, yeah, I feel the exact same way. Like, I could see us getting married. I was like, okay, cool. And you guys know how that relationship ended.
I don't remember who that was. Who was that?
I'm not going to say names on the podcast.
I'm just going to name all the girlfriends I know of and you just tell me which one that was, okay?
Cue the background music from Eric.
Oh, yeah. Ba, 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 ba. I don't know why circus music came on in my head for that segment.
Are you saying that your relationships were a circus?
That's the quality of his
relationship. Let's read into this more. That relationship was a circus for sure.
But that very conversation I definitely had with girls far before I knew really anything about what I was. And I don't think it was the worst thing to have that conversation. I don't think it's bad to
mm-hmm.
have the intention of I only want to date someone I actually could see myself at least subtle, like at least on the surface level marrying. It's like, you know, I'm going to marry this girl who, you know, kills kittens. It's like, I mean, it's like that. I don't see myself marrying her. So why would I date her?
Right. No. Yeah. That's, and I don't think there's anything wrong.
I don't know why I defaulted to that.
Yeah. That was your default example.
There's definitely a middle ground. Like there's a middle ground between learning and experience and being intentional growing and being intentional where you're at in life. So when you're 16, mm-hmm. how can you truly say, cause it's always two camps. It's always mm-hmm. either your date. It's okay. Cause you hear two camps of one camp is, oh, it's okay. Just date for experience. Mm-hmm. And the other one is date because you want to find a serious relationship and eventually marriage. Why can't it be both? Why can't you?
Yeah.
Cause you mm-hmm. need to get to the point where you can define what you're looking for and where your values are and pushing. And even what Anthony, you were saying, dating, you said the benefit of dating outside was helping you think about your core values. Now, I don't know if I fully agree in practice, but I in spirit agree with that concept of experience, of understanding who I am and learning what I value and when it comes to someone else. So there is value in that.
Yeah, like I think maybe if I could drill a little bit deeper into that idea, like I feel as if maybe at certain ages, maybe it's more healthy to date outside of your faith than others. Like, I think maybe when you're younger, it doesn't make as much sense. And I feel like it's probably not wise when you're younger. So I think my perspective is definitely colored by being divorced and being an older adult in my late 20s, almost 30, and now like starting to date again and having dated. So I dated non-Adventist, like, when in high school and post-divorce, and the experiences have been vastly different. Like, I was definitely asking different questions as an adult in my late 20s than I was when I was 15, 16.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
So, no, same question.
Same question. It's, do you like World of Warcraft? That's the only thing I cared about when I was 15. Oh, you do? Okay, we can date. No, I think those experiences, like, I'm glad I had those experiences as a teenager dating outside my faith. But I almost think faith never even came up then. Like, I wasn't even thinking about this stuff. I was like, oh, you're attractive. Let's date. Like, but I think
what's interesting though, is that for me, faith was the weird factor in all of it. Like, I think that's interesting that you say faith wasn't, because I think it was the weird factor in the sense that I tended to be someone who's very involved spiritually, especially in high school and college. So then it obviously took a pretty important, you know, seat in the relationship. And so it was quite interesting that you say you weren't even thinking about it. Cause I mean, that may be a lot of people, other people may share my story, but share the experiences of my story. But that's where I'm like, faith was very important. And because of the faith that I had, obviously, and because of the values that kind of come from that, I was like, I'm only dating for marriage.
I do think there was a shift in my dating intentionality later on, because I didn't, you know, I mean, you guys were there when I was growing up. So, you know, like, I was a pastor's kid. I grew up having lots of head knowledge, but not really caring about religious things until probably like junior, senior year ish. And so like, I had a lot of head knowledge, but it wasn't like a real living act of faith in my life until I was like maybe 17. So girls I dated before that wasn't even on my radar. I was just like, you know, whatever. I think after that happened and I met Jesus for myself, then that was definitely a huge part of it. It was like, do they care about the same types of things that I care about? Which, yeah.
Sean, what about you and all of your dating relationships?
Yeah, well, all one of them.
I felt terrible. Not really, though.
I mean, I don't feel bad about it. I didn't have to deal with the breakups, and I've seen both of you in post-breakup, and I never had to go through that. So,
both of us have seen you, and there wasn't even a breakup. It was you weren't even dating, and the despair that you were in. So
that's a whole separate story. Yeah,
the amount of dirt we have on each other is dangerous.
It's too much.
It's ferociously dangerous is the only way I can think of it.
That's why we've agreed to never share. We've agreed to never share.
But let me tell you one story about Sean. No, I'm so the interesting thing about all of this, I mean, we've kind of talked about dating, and it's all started because you said, Anthony, unequally yoked in dating and marriage is different. And I think I'm kind of curious, we've talked a little bit about that, but why would you say that?
I think that it comes down to really how you view dating and what dating is. And I think probably, so I think if I can go back to my pie, I think that first layer of like, I think we get married too early and we take dating too seriously too young in Adventism and probably Christianity in general. And so because of that, like, I think ideally, and I've talked about this with you guys, like, the things that I look for now in a spouse are vastly different than what I was looking for when I was even 23 and proposed and I got married. Like, they're so fundamentally different that, not like faith, because faith is still the same, but I think, the things that I, and I think the ways that I've grown as an adult in like knowing myself and what I want in a spouse and stuff, I think are so, the amount of growth that had to take place between 23 and 29 for me to even recognize, oh, this is really what I want in someone. Therefore, I think like if you're dating in an older space, like we're not talking like high school, but now, but like later 20s, 30s or whatever, and like as a competent professional adult and you're dating in the world, like, I think one of the most valuable experiences I've ever had is dating outside of my faith. And I think really it showed me, and Jesse, we talked a lot about this, Sean, not as much, but I was able to recognize, wow, like, faith is such a core part of me. And I think I thought it wasn't, and it almost showed me, I feel like it almost made me value my faith even more, because I was able to see, oh, now I see why this wouldn't work. You know,
but like, see, that's what's interesting about you saying all of this, because that's not necessarily going to be the experience of some people. And that's the, that's what, when I was talking about those preachers who would, you know, they're going to come to your school and tell you about not having sex before you're married. And that's kind of the main message. Those preachers would be like horrified at what you're saying, because in essence, the potential of someone dating outside their faith and then just getting, in essence, the idea would be getting sucked into the apostasy, is fairly high, or at least the fear of it happening is fairly high. So that's what's quite interesting. Like, that's where I still don't know if I agree with what you're saying. I'm not discounting anything you've experienced, or, but that's where it's like, I'm just so, that is a very interesting thought.
I agree that the fear of it would be high, and I can understand why, because I think, like, and I tend to be an ideological paradox. Like, at the end of the day, I do think it's way more wise to marry someone within your faith, and to seriously date someone within your faith. So that spoils my perspective. That is what I think. Like, I think that's way more wise.
But you can't handle not considering the possibility that it could be completely opposite of that.
Well,
and wanting to live in that for a little while.
No, I don't. I think it's way wiser to marry within your faith perspective, because it's more likely that your values will be aligned, but I don't think it's a guarantee that your values will be aligned. Mm-hmm. And I think
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think just the, not necessarily even, I think having conversations with people outside of your faith, number one, just in general, outside of dating, is like one of the most important things you can do in general. Mm-hmm. And I think, if someone came to me and they're like, yo, Pastor Anthony, like, I really like this person, you know, someone who's an adult, like our age, like 20s, you know, was like, yo, like, I'm really interested in this person. They're really interested in me. We've had a lot of great conversations. You know, like, do you think it's a good idea to date? I would just be like, bro, or, you know, sis. Yeah, like, go for it, but let's go for it and let's think deeply about it. Like, let's just have deep conversation. Like, and I think maybe this fear comes from the idea that, like, oh, people are going to get sucked in. People are just like not deep thinkers, and they're going to get sucked into something. And I think that that's certainly possible, but I also think, like, if you have community around you and you're thinking deeply about what's going on, asking hard questions, especially if you have people in your life that will ask you hard questions, like you guys, for me, I think it could be valuable.
That's where I think I totally agree with you. Because we're scared of the possibility of someone going off in a direction that we think might be bad. So then we kind of just make these general statements because you could make the general statement, it's probably wiser to marry someone who probably already holds many of your core values. You know, that's a general statement you could make, but there's saying that. And then there's also what you're saying, where it's like, yeah, but just because they grew up in the same religion with the same ideas does not mean that they are someone who deeply values the same things that you do. And so then that means that we ought to go towards every relationship with the idea of, let's talk about this and think deeply about this. And ask ourselves, like, you know, like, let's have conversations, like, you know, what do you really see, you know, and what do you really think you value? And, you know, do you see yourself in 10 years with this person value, you know, with your values actually sharing the same things? And like those types of questions, and inviting the conversation about it instead of making the blanket statement, you know, this is what's better to do or what you ought to do. That's what I totally agree with what you're saying.
I would agree with that concept, Anthony. I think where I would probably disagree is it necessary to start dating someone without having, is it necessary to start dating before you've had those core conversations, right? Where we differ between friendship and relationship and actual dating. Because in essence, at some point, if you hold the value that eventually this could turn into marriage, not like the same level of, oh, I'm only dating you because I can see this, you know, there's a difference of saying it that way versus, I could always see that this could, I'm not going to oppose if this relationship grows into something more. I'm going to have an open mind with it. If you have that attitude, then you are saying that there are certain if you're willing to start dating, then you're willing to, at some surface level, say that there's no barriers or deal breakers, right? And so either that, or you're dating with the idea that it's purely experience, and I don't believe in this context that this will go anywhere, which I would disagree with. I would disagree with dating if you confidently knew that it would not lead somewhere. Right. Not saying it has to.
You're kind
not
of
saying
getting
it,
into a weird ethical place there. Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm not saying. I'm not saying not that it has to lead there. But again, it, if it if I'm saying it can't,
you mean
then
marriage.
Why would I do that?
Right. Like there's
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
It's not
with
likely.
Marriage. Right. Like if it, not even just likely. Like if there's a deal breaker, why would I start dating? So that's where you start. I would say I would have those conversations outside of the dating portion.
Sean, because she's hot.
Sean. Exactly.
Have you not met young men?
I'm saying this as theory, not practice, because that's just the reality. But anyways, my whole point with that is just when if we're getting into, again, what's the purpose of dating and all of that again, too, it just it would be challenging to just purely say, I'm going to date you as an experience. Yeah. But I don't see this going anywhere, or it probably won't. That seems like a weird mindset to go into dating, at least in my way of looking at it. That just seems strange to me.
I feel in response like that's really interesting. And now having dated outside of my faith, outside of our faith space, it's interesting.
The one true faith.
The one true
remember
faith.
Remember that. Out of the one true faith. Remember that.
It's interesting to note like just how intensely we view marriage, you know, or we view dating. And cause you know, Jesse, even you had said, I kind of see that as an ethical problem. What's interesting is like the vast majority of like non-Christian dating culture is exactly what you just described, is like people just date. You date for the experience, you date because it's fun. Maybe you even know it's going to end, but that's okay. And you just enjoy it for that time. And you value that person as a whole person that for that time. And then when it's time to end, it's time to end. And, you know, so that's what I'm saying is like, it does, I think, come back to how you view dating and what the purpose of dating is. And I think so often we so intensely view dating as like a courtship for marriage. When I think, I don't know, I think maybe I think there could be some reclaiming of the value of just getting to know people for the experience of getting to know people.
So how is that difference between a friendship and like, where does dating, what does dating offer?
I was just going to say, I think the difference is we're asking like it's kind of like, to what level are you dating someone? I mean, are you like, you know, seeing them a little bit cause it's like kind of fun and flirty and you're just getting to know them, or like, are you in a serious committed relationship with them? And right. I think there's a difference there.
Facebook
I mean,
it's official.
Yeah. Yeah. The Facebook,
it's not real
because
until
Facebook official, it needs, you have to be both part of the one true faith, or else you're
doomed.
Jesus will not love you. couldn't even say that with a straight face. I do think there's a difference there, and I think that's why what you're saying, unequally yoked in the dating space, can be different than unequally yoked in the marital space, because once you're in the marital space, marriage requires commitment. It requires a commitment to each other for the long haul. And without that from both parties, then that's why marriages fall apart. And if commitment is more than just saying, I want to be married. It's, you know, action and continuing to build your marriage. But because that's the case, if you cannot commit to all of somebody, or are committing to somebody with the hopes that they will change their values, then that's where you get into a really broken marriage, broken relationship. It's a long-term... Not that they all will fail, but the likelihood of your marriage failing and causing collateral damage like crazy is much higher if you're going into it with the mentality of, we don't value the same things, but whatever, we'll give it a shot. Hopefully they'll change. But I think, yeah, like if you're seeing somebody, you go on a few dates or something like that, and it doesn't get to the serious committed part of it where it's like, we don't value the same thing, but obviously I'm now at this committed part, we're dating for, you know, for... with the hopes or the idea that this could go farther. I think that's one thing compared to, and I think I agree with you, where it's like, we ought to lower the serious temperature of dating within Christianity. Or, I mean, not that we ought to, but rather just, we ought to let it be a lot less intense so that you can just kind of get to know people Because if not, it just ends up being a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
I want to ask both of you. Mm-hmm. So if we're coming down to, again, it all matters like where we draw the line, where we practically apply this. So if we're, Anthony, you've already said your answer. If someone came up to you and you would say it depends on context, right? So if you knew they were around your age and you know some of their life experiences, what's interesting, and even before I ask this question, Anthony, what's interesting in your context is you are an Adventist pastor.
I am.
So your job would, in some ways, I don't know if prohibits a strong enough, like that's too strong of a word, but it'd be very strange for you to marry a non-Adventist.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't even know if that would straight up be a fireable offense, but it'd be very odd. Like in practice, it probably wouldn't go well for you in your career.
Do it, Anthony. Right? Do it. let's find out what happens.
Be the trailblazer, the pioneer. So what makes that weird interesting?
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No. You finish.
No, I'm just saying like it'd be interesting because then, in some ways, not just that whole theory of, you know, should I even date a non-Adventist or someone, mm-hmm. you know, where I'm not sure if I'm going to lead to marriage with them just for the experience. In some ways, you're almost explicitly saying, like, because of my job, uh-huh. we can't get married. We won't get married. Uh-huh. Like you're uh-huh. saying, in my line of work, this would not work. You would need to be Adventist, which right. makes it a whole different conversation than even what we've talked about. So anyways, I just wanted to mention that out of interest.
Sort of respond to that, like, I've had a conversation along those lines for sure and had to have that conversation like, okay, like, let's talk about this and talk about how this would work for you and for us. And like,
yeah.
if this would be a thing that makes sense. And to that conversation, the answer was no for multiple reasons, but,
Yeah,
I don't think it would be a firing offense because there's pastors who marry non-Adventists.
There are. I know that can happen. I don't know of any of them.
You don't know of any? No. I know of a few. So a couple in California.
Okay, I need of names. Course. I need names.
I mean, if they're in California, they're not Adventists. So yeah, exactly.
But Sean, you're in California.
But with Sean is at a different conference than me. But
how do you know?
Sean, you're in California.
Prove it.
You're an elder at a church.
Sean's like, prove it.
Prove it. But that's just the ultimate.
All that to say, I don't think it's a fireable offense, but I think it's certainly, I agree with you. It would be looked upon as very odd, and it would be a thing. It would
be
a
taboo
deal.
For sure.
Yeah, it would be taboo.
And maybe less so in certain areas than others, but either way, I mean, the main question again was, you know, if we're talking to someone and they say like, where do I draw the line? Like if I want, first off, what do I perceive dating as? Is it something that is to lead me towards marriage, getting me prepared for marriage? And if so, then are there certain non-negotiables? Are there certain deal breakers at the beginning I shouldn't even get into? I can just maintain a positive friendship with this person, even if they have different values. But when I start dating, when I get into serious relationship talks, what are the lines when it comes to what matters most? What are the things, like, what are the bullet point things you would say, like, these are deal breakers if this is where you disagree?
You're saying,
and I'm asking both of you, just as pastors, if someone came up and asked you, what are the deal breakers? And is being Adventist one of those?
Well, I think, no, I don't think Adventist or not Adventist is a deal breaker. I think it's worthy of further discussion. Again, like there's the difference between what I would say from, you know, from preaching, which is here's the generally wiser, you know, choices generally, versus someone comes to me with a specific question and, you know, as you said, Anthony, the process of talking it out, but for it, let's say you don't have somebody in your life that can do that, with you, or you don't feel like can do that with you. I would say that some of the basic questions you ought to ask are just ultimately like, what do I value? What do I really value? And just to understand that things that were important to you, you know, in your childhood, they may resurface as really important to you as you get older. So like your family was like really valued cleanliness, you know, and now your dorm room's a complete mess, but you got married and now you really want your house to be clean. Like there's just stuff like that. And religion is one of those things. Sometimes some of us tend to walk away a little bit from our faith, at least like the practice of our faith. But then you get married and you think about having your kids or you have a kid and all of a sudden it becomes really important to raise your child in that faith that you grew up in. So those are some of the things that it's like, you just ought to be thinking about that, not just about this specific moment of, oh, I love them, they love me, but also like, where are we going to be in 5-10 years, values wise. And of course you can't always make that call. Tons of crazy things happen. But my whole point in saying that is just to remember that we tend to, as human beings, become slightly more conservative the older we get, or at least like we go back to the things we valued when we were younger. And so so that will be a factor. And then, but then ultimately, I think it just comes down to like, is it a relationship that really allows us both to go where we want to go? Because if my value is ultimately in, I want to go out and like change the world, and I'm going to do that by going out and serving every weekend, you know, type of thing. And maybe it's someone, your potential spouse or someone you're dating, who they like church and they want to be in church every week, but you want to be out serving every week. I mean, that's just something that's going to cause conflict, and it doesn't have to be the end. It doesn't have to be a deal breaker, but it ought to be something that you're just thinking critically about, you know, is that, you know, what do I ultimately hold as value? So I think that's my basic answer to that, Sean. Like when it comes, I don't think to respond to what you said earlier about the answer that we always have is everything is more gray and there are no black and white things, and we just have to talk about them more. But I think it does come down to asking yourself questions and sitting with the answers that actually are true, not the ones you want to be true, but the ones that are actually true. And some of those may not be things you like. Mm-hmm. Some of them might be. I don't know, but yeah.
Cool. I will say in a short way, respond in a really short way. I agree with what Jesse has said. I think something valuable to do, and this is something a friend of mine suggested that I do. Jonathan, he suggested I do this, and it was super helpful. I did this about a year ago or so. Is just like create like a list of like, who am I and what do I value. And that was something super awesome for me, because I was able to like delineate like, what are the things I care about in the world, for myself, for my faith, in a spouse, you know, potentially again, like, and that's something I think I would advise almost anyone to do, is just create like literally like a physical list of like, what is it that I value the most? And then sort of, if you're thinking about dating outside of your faith, just sort of like going down your list of values, like, is this person in alignment, you know, with my values? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, like Jesse said, that could lead to like a hard answer that, you know, it's hard to reconcile with, or it could be, wow, this person is exactly everything I value. So yeah, I do agree that it tends to come down to core values. And so I think, that's sort of my approach would be like, if anyone asked me that question in a real context, I would be like, okay, like, Have you had those conversations about like what it is you value at your deepest level, and what it is they value, and are those things aligning? Do you feel like you're headed in the same direction in life, in the world? And to be really brutally honest about that.
And I think a big thing just along those lines is to ask yourself, am I trying to convince myself that I actually want to do that, or is that something like genuine, like I already feel kind of a natural inclination in that direction? And that, I think that's a big part of it, is this is for anybody. This isn't like just unbelievers, or believers, non-believers, or, you know, Adventist with a non-Adventist Christian. But it's really just like, you know, if it is a non-Adventist Christian, you have to ask yourself, you know, and they really value going to their church that they've been going to, you know, am I willing to actually incline to go to church twice a weekend, you know? Or is that something that like over time I would begin to resent and hate? And the thing is, your answer may be, no, I'd totally be open to it. And that's great. But you just have to be willing to sit with the realities of some of the differences you might have, whether it's faith or other things.
And I do think being a non-Adventist Christian and not like being with a Buddhist or something, like that's very different, I think.
Yeah.
Especially yeah. depending on what type of Adventist mm-hmm. you are, because as we know, Adventism is a huge continuum, like or a spectrum, you know, like there's the Adventists who would say drinking coffee is sinful and you're going to hell for drinking it. And there's the Adventists who are on the other side of the spectrum, you know? And so, you know, if you're in a space where you're like, the only thing that matters to me is the resurrected Jesus, and, you know, and then you meet someone who's not an Adventist, but they're a Christian that has the same conviction as you, then wow. You know, so I think I'm not trying to create any blanket statements, but I think what I'm saying is like, I think it comes down to having a good understanding of who you are and mm-hmm. what it is that you value. And I feel like maybe that is the core of it and the starting point. Like, who am I and what do I want and what do I value?
Yeah.
And then being able to kind of work from there.
So, sounds like in conclusion, don't ever marry someone who's not of your faith. And
that's
don't marry someone outside of the one true faith is actually what I meant to say. Mm-hmm. And you will always be happy.
You will swim in a land of jelly beans forever.
Look, the most important is you don't marry someone that was homeschooled. that's really what we've tried to be. That's what we've been trying to say for 90 minutes.
And the reason that we're saying that is because we all know Eric, and Eric was homeschooled through high school, and we would not want to be married to him.
I mean, look how he turned out.
Exactly.
We'll be having Michelle on next week to explain why.
Eric is going to do something messed up with our voices.
He's our technician for this, so he's going to do something messed up.
There's going to be retribution.
So that was our conversation surrounding being unequally yoked. We hope that that was helpful or thought-provoking in your own wrestling with that topic. But if you wanted to connect and give us feedback or ask additional questions or even give us thoughts or ideas about other things we could cover this season or beyond, you can go to our social media pages, our Facebook and our Instagram, both Seeking What They Sought, or go to our website, Seeking SDA. And on our website as well, you can find a donation button. Now, here's the thing about donations. We're not doing this to make money. However, it does cost money to keep up a website and the space to upload the podcast files and different things like that. So if you're interested in helping, we would love to help. And you can give on our website at seekingsda.com. We'll be continuing to record and release episodes. So we hope that you're going to continue tuning in through all of this, and we'll see you in the next episode.